Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch 105. It's September 24th, 2020. Andy Grove, who helped found Intel and then led the enterprise for years as its CEO and chairman, has taught me some extraordinary things. One of them occurred in a meeting where he and several of his direct reports were plotting the launch of their Celeron microprocessor. I was there as a consultant. The theory of disruption had identified a threat to Intel. Two companies, AMD and Cyrix, had attacked the low end of the microprocessor market, selling much lower cost chips to companies that were making entry-level computers. They had gained a significant market share and then had begun moving up market. Intel needed to respond. During a break in the meeting, Grove asked me, "How do I do this?" I readily responded that he needed to set up a different autonomous business unit that had a different overhead structure and its own sales force. Andy said in his typical gruff voice, "You are such a naive academic. I asked you how to do it, and you told me what I should do." He swore and said, "I know what I need to do. I just don't know how to do it." I felt like I was standing in front of a deity with no place to hide. Grove was right. I was indeed a naive academic. I had just shown him that I didn't know the difference between what and how. All right, that's it. Short reading today, not even a full page. This is the foreword to the four disciplines of execution. This foreword is written by Clayton Christensen, who kind of popularized his theory of disruption, innovator's dilemma, and a lot of that stuff. Competing Against Luck is also a really good book where he goes through jobs to be done as a sort of theory and framework. And I don't know, I like this little bit here, the difference between what and how. And Andy Grove being gruff and knocking him for kind of just being, you know, the ivory tower academic, not in the trenches. This book is, you know, it's called The Four Disciplines of Execution. So it's a decent setup thematically on, and they point out, like, even through graduate business schools and stuff, how much time is spent on strategy and how little time is spent on execution. And you hear throughout startup literature and everything, and all the practices of it, that ideas, it's easy. It's actually executing them that really makes all the difference. And it's got me thinking about what and how. And as the book, you know, I've not read the entire book, but I'm into it now. And as they move forward, the four disciplines are alarmingly simple. You know, these books, these frameworks are, when you get down to basics, the fundamentals, the building blocks should be pretty simple. It can foster lots of complexity, but the rule set should be pretty simple. And the idea is you focus on a wildly important goal, no more than two, under the recognition that basically that otherwise we all get too distracted. They call it the whirlwind, the stuff in your day, the urgent things that come along, the emergencies you must respond to, the whirlwind. But amidst the whirlwind, you have to focus on one wildly important goal, and you establish these lead measures that you're going to track. They distinguish lead measures and lag measures. Lead is like you want to get in shape, say. So a lead measure that indicates your tracking behavior that gets you towards the goal would be something like hours of exercise this week, or miles you're going to run, calories you're going to eat. Those are lead measures. A lag measure is you get on the scale and you see how you've performed. But by the time you take a lag measure, it's all the performance, all the things you've done to influence your success or failure are already baked in. So focus on the lead measures. And then the other two components, the three and four, are create a compelling scorecard. And then it's something like establish a cadence. Yeah, create a cadence of accountability. That's it, really. So It's very Jocko, it's very David Goggins. Like, the only way to do it is to do it. And it's like Vince Lombardi, you know, "Gentlemen, this is a football." It's like very fundamental, but I nonetheless find it very interesting. I'm going to finish the book, read the whole book, and I'll come back to it. But it does, in my mind, very much converge with, I've read some of the stuff from Jeff Sandifer and Laura Sandifer, husband and wife who created the Acton Academy, among many other things that they've done. But they're really, right now, their primary focus and mission in life is to further the Acton Academy, a first grade through 12th grade private school situation. And I even read from the appendices of Laura's book. I think it's called Courage to Grow. It's the story of their creating the Acton Academy. And she outlined sort of their mission and principles as an institution. And then she gives examples of some of the materials that the students create, including a contract that the students create. And in the model of the Acton School, which is distinguished and in contrast, in stark contrast to many of the things I read from John Taylor Gatto, criticizing this sort of mass factory government schooling that we have, public schools that we have in distinction against something like Acton. In Acton, there aren't, you don't sit with people your same age. You sit in a group of people all elementary age. You sit in a group of people all junior high age and high school age. But they break down into small groups, twos and fours. And you enter your accountability team and you meet with them on Mondays and you set goals for the week. And the kids, the students, are peer reviewing each other on a periodic, regular basis. And you get knocked down by your peers if you're just using all the freedoms that you have to slack off, to, you know, just jack around and not really focus on your goals and what you need to be doing. Core skills like reading, writing, arithmetic, and the shared projects and all that kind of stuff. You also, though, get scored down, even if you're doing amazingly, fantastically well at your own studies, but you're not participating in the group. You're not holding others accountable. You're not helping them. You're not checking in. And so they have this interesting thing where they nest a group of two or four inside a group of 36 to 40, inside a group of 120, and then when you factor in parents and stuff, inside 250. And they don't let a campus get bigger than that. When there's more interest, they go open another campus. And so it's also got like Dunbar's number layered on top. So it's really interesting. And they have very consciously focused on the how, not just the what, but the how they're going to structure all of this stuff. So Andy Grove saying, look, you're telling me what to do. I need to know how to do it. And that the simple how stuff could be very basic. So if y'all been listening along, like, you know, like, this is on my mind with a group like the Regulars. All we have done for 10 years or more is meet together occasionally. I show up on Fridays, and so people don't show up every Friday. Some do. Some do show up every Friday for years. It's wonderful. But some, you know, just can't. Kids, jobs, travel, etc. They can't. They moved. And so they check in with us on a less regular schedule. Now, COVID and lockdowns finally got me to offer some digitized versions of stuff. I did not want to digitize the Regulars forever. I wanted it to be a Friday morning thing. Outside of this stuff we do, like, there's an email list and there's a little bit. There's a Tumblr account, but that's not really connective tissue, really. It's just sort of like a little place that if nobody's heard of the Regulars, one of the Regulars could point to them and tell them where to go. And we've done all kinds of field trips and excursions, and an email list lets me be able to share those details with people pretty easily. But now we're on Slack, and people are connecting with each other when they want to. There's still not much scaffolding or structure to it. And the regular coffees that we do on Friday mornings isn't really the Regulars. The Regulars could be something different. And I've got little clusters of friends or contacts are here and there outside of corporate stuff. In your company, you probably have, you know, shared goals and shared standards and reporting mechanisms and dashboards and all those kinds of things. But think about all the stuff of life that is outside of that. Think about all the people that are they're freelancers and tiny, tiny companies working out of co-working. Like having those kinds of tools, the how of shared goals and development, mixed into your life. It's been on my mind a lot lately. So I'm intrigued, by this notion. Cause you know, I've been sharing, it's already just past 7 here. I've been up for a while, but I didn't record this thing first thing. But I did get up early. I think I let myself sleep. I think I got up at 4, and I guess I didn't actually get out of bed till maybe 5:15, something like that. I've been testing lately. I'm not even setting an alarm. I'm just going to bed and seeing when I get up. And it so far it's working pretty well. So anyway, the actually, I think technically, now that I think about it, I did set an alarm. It went off. I got to it really fast because I was already awake. I didn't mean to set the alarm. You know how it is. I think from yesterday or the day before, sometime recently, I just need to turn it off where it doesn't come back tomorrow. But I was already awake when the alarm went off, but I let myself kind of just lay there for another 45 minutes or so before I got out of bed, I think. Regardless, with goals like that, or, you know, at the regulars, people talk about like what they're learning, what they're working on, what they need to develop next, and things like maybe training for a marathon, or maybe some, you know, a small cluster of us get into, it might be paleo. Sometimes I've seen several of the folks start really talking in detail about the keto world. I've never adopted that diet or regimen, probably won't, but that's also instructive. Like, there were enough of us that did, and they really appreciated the ability to interact with each other and connect. So I think that with the regulars, I can maybe help foster that and put the lightest scaffolding in, but more structure than it is today. The regular coffee is just, we're here, we're in Austin, or we're on Zoom. Come hang out with us. You'll be heard. You'll be listened to. Let's connect and see what happens. And that's totally great. But if there was another layer or slice to this where people could volunteer and opt into something where there's a little how to it, and you could select what you're doing, but it's not just purely an app. There's plenty of habit trackers and that kind of thing. There's something about it actually being inside a group of people who also know each other and are investing that kind of time together to just truly just be present. That's it. Just be present, to talk, be heard, find people you disagree with and still respect, that you can have a conversation with, a real argument, and discover new things. Like, argument not as a rehearsed disputation process, a dispute as a performance, like all of the, you know, quote, arguments on the pundit people on television, but more like an argument as a shared dynamic process of discovery with really good questions and Socratic and all that. Like, we do all of that, and it's great. By the way, too, that's how Acton does most of its, quote, teaching. They try as hard as they can. Everything is the Socratic method. You are being empowered from the first grade through the 12th grade to learn how to ask good questions, answer good questions, wrestle with answers, and solve problems yourself. And in small, and in groups, and through groups. But I just mean, you're not sitting in a chair, the bell rings every hour, and you're memorizing what somebody's reciting to you. It's a completely different model. So anyway, I was struck by this out of the intro of this book from Clayton Christensen, and trying to wrap my mind around the difference between what and how. And then now this simple little model here has really got me thinking about the regulars and all of us kind of going through development. Last thing I'll say, too, is I'm already into the low hundreds here on the dispatches, still not sharing interviews with you all. I've got to get the time to get those done. Just make it happen. The only, you know, how do you do it? You do it. I just got to go do it. I haven't yet. I've recorded a couple, had enough tiny technical issues. I don't want to release them to you because there's audio problems with them both. But one of the ones I want to do is a friend, Peyton Wimmer. Peyton, longtime regular. He's really a strategy consultant these days, and a good one, but he's also been somebody that all the musicians of Austin and others, I mean, many other people, but musicians that you'd heard of have had his phone number 24/7 because he's really good with mental health and addiction and people that are really in a bad way. Peyton is able to help, and he has all of these, he has his whole own framework. It's completely coherent and comprehensive. And he's got all these nice little turns of phrase. One of them, as an example, is dysfunction wants tomorrow to be just like today. Like, that's its job. Dysfunction just wants to stop change. And one time on the back deck there at Mozart's, we really delved into that with him and asked him, you know, well, then what's the definition of functional? Everybody talks about, you know, dysfunctional this, dysfunctional that. So what's functional? And he said, it's unencumbered development. We all have gifts, skills, abilities, things, you know, and we need to move into the world and through our lives and just develop those and help each other develop them. And another thing, he talks a lot about systems and capacity of those systems and how to expand the capacity of those systems. And he has another phrasing that I really appreciate here. And we've, you know, I've touched through here a few times around productivity stuff or now talking about strategy execution stuff. And he's got this nice phrasing where he says, look, all structure is arbitrary, but every system needs structure. Every system has structure. But all structures are arbitrary. Pick one and get moving. Like you like four disciplines of execution. Great. You like some other model. Great. You like getting things done. Wonderful. Quit reading about the methods. Pick one and start doing what it is that you do. That's also like the Michael Lewis bit a while back on his referencing the leader of Iceland who said, we need to quit banking and we need to go fishing again after the financial crisis and all the derivatives and all this mess. That it's like, how do you do it? You do it. We need to get back to the basics. So out of all of this, I guess it's nice to read about the four disciplines of execution. It's fine. It's another book like this. We're adopting this inside Amplifier as a shared language and way to approach this sort of stuff. It's really great. I like that it's happening, and the book so far seems pretty interesting, and it's sort of tantalizingly simple in its presentation. So I think all the complexity and richness comes in just actually doing it. And so what it forces you to do is have a shared view of a week. You state your goal sort of amongst your peers, and then you focus on these lead. Here's the stuff I should be doing. And you check in weekly and you just kind of keep that going. It's a really neat idea, and I hope to layer it into the regular soon. What I also hope to do very soon is start the interviews again. And with someone like Peyton, I almost view it as like a little mini series just with Peyton, because what I want to first do is get not his biography, but a sufficient character sketch, spend time talking about it, you know, his family and how he grew up and what he's done, where he's been, his experiences, and just get all of that. Then spend at least one time just focusing on his thinking and his model and his framework and that kind of stuff. And then with those two foundational things, now we can apply his framework, talk about things that are going on in the world. It's very, he approached it very fractal, the way he looks at his sort of framework about capacity and systems and structure and development versus dysfunction. It applies equally well to an individual who might be, you know, at their maximum peak health or might be really coming off the rails. It applies inside a family, it applies inside a company, et cetera. So I'm eager to have that discussion with him. But once we sort of have the establishing background for people to listen to whenever they want to, if they want to, then we can kind of, you know, talk about stories and things he's seen and how he applies this or how it works. And I think we can do that sort of thing over and over and over again. It's one of the two interviews I've done is with Gary Hoover, and I can't remember recently. I guess it was the Ivy Lee method. That's what it was. And here's a story that James Clear brings from 1918, and it's somebody working with Charles Schwab, the steel baron, and just goes to show like some of the stuff. It's not new. This isn't new. Four disciplines of execution. This is not new. These ideas are not new. They have been around for a long, long time. And that's Gary Hoover's real passion right now with the American Business History Center. I'll link to this stuff in the show notes so you can go look around if you want. But Gary's whole thing is we're really missing out because it's the old adage, like, if you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it. And one of these I read from Ecclesiastes 1. There's nothing new under the sun. Everything that you're going through has happened before. You just don't know that that's happened before. And by the way, people in the future are going to go through exactly what you're going through right now, and they will not remember that you went through what you're going through. It's just an inescapable sort of situation. Doesn't mean go try to learn all the history we can. And that's what, in the world of business, Gary Hoover is all about. His point is that business schools do not teach history. History colleges do not teach business history. And there's so much information. We talk a good game about, oh, it's a new economy and the rules are different. And his contention is, no, as a matter of fact, they're not. As a matter of fact, they're not. And so he is sort of a walking 4D Technicolor encyclopedia on all of this stuff. And so he's another example where it's part of the plan here to, I already talked to them. I just got to fix the audio. We talked for about 2.5 hours. We got maybe through 75-80% of his story. He's done so much cool stuff. Interesting guy. But then I want to get into, he and I should talk every month probably. And it's just like, look, these things are going on now. This is happening in, these are funding trends, or this is what's happening to the digitally native vertical brands. Gary loves retail, among other, you know, sector. He loves big industry too, but he loves retail. Was a retailer himself, built, thought of the idea, built Bookstop up, sold it to Barnes & Noble, that kind, on the board of Whole Foods for years, that kind of a guy. And so to be able to say, look, this is what's happening right now. Here's a wonderful essay on what's going on with the digitally native vertical brands. Talk to me about a retail and commercial history and share some lessons, share some thoughts. That's where all of that is headed. So what I'm clearly not doing well is focusing on one goal, coming up with the lead measures that'll get me there, having any kind of scorecard and any shared accountability. Clearly, I need to not only read this book, but as I'm going, apply it. We're going to do it inside Amplifier. I need to gut it out and do it for these other pursuits on the side. That's it for this morning. I'll get this posted, and hope you all have a great day. Thanks.